Welcome to University College's podcast, I Do Declare, the podcast that offers unique academic and experiential insights from the people who put the major in exploration. Welcome to University College's podcast, I Do Declare. I'm your host, Adam Mayer, and the Director of Career Services for University College. Today, we're joined by Jason Frasca, entrepreneurship professor and co-director of the Mix Lab in Feliciano Center for Entrepreneurship. Jason, welcome.
Thanks, Adam. It's a pleasure to be here. Really excited about it.
And I know we tried to coordinate schedules last year to get you on the show, so let's get to it. Tell us about your degree in business, and I think there was a concentration in marketing. Give us a little background there.
Yeah, sure. You know, I was always interested in old school advertisements growing up. I always found them quite interesting, commercials, that sort of thing. And so I just felt like marketing was a good fit for my abilities and background growing up. It's kind of funny how careers take and, you know, degrees in it, you know, intersect and with opportunity. I took a direct marketing class in college, didn't know anything about it. You know, it was the one measurable form of marketing at the time. This predates all digital media, so I'm dating myself a little bit here, right? In an interview for a job, replying to old New York Times ads and faxing them in with a dial-up modem, right? And, and I got the interview with this direct marketing company, and they asked me, do I know what direct marketing is? I said, I do. You know, it's the one measurable form of marketing, and I got the job. And so, and that kind of propelled me. I had a 9-year career in direct marketing before moving on.
Oh, fantastic. So tell us about your roles here at Montclair State. A lot of exciting stuff. I know we've talked about things here and there. Yeah. Please bring us up to date.
Yeah, sure. So I'm co-director of the MIX Lab, the Mix Lab, which is our innovation research lab housed in the School of Business. It's a makerspace. We run our innovation courses from this space. It's free for all students. We have about 50 3D printers, laser cutters, various making tools and gear. And we're open 4 or 5 days a week. It's student run by student volunteers who are really interested in 3D printing and making. It's a really exciting space. Students kind of make it their own, hang out, work. It really has developed into a robust program.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's one thing. And the other is I co-direct a couple of our international study abroad programs. So I just got back from Austria last week. We were just chatting about this in the hall, right? So it's a reciprocal exchange with the University of Graz. Graz and Montclair are sister cities going back to World War II. So for 70 years, our two universities have been exchanging at least 2 students per year in each direction. So there's a couple of students from Austria here on campus right now. And from that was born this Transatlantic Entrepreneurship Academy, where 20 students from University of Graz come to our university in February, work with our 20 students. So we have a 40-student cohort. They spend a week doing a deep dive on innovation, green sustainability, and then a couple weeks later during spring break, we go to Austria, the 40 students unite, and continue on their green sustainable projects with a focus on entrepreneurship and concretizing the projects that they worked on here in Montclair. So we just got back. We finished our 6th cohort. We've had about 250 students go through now over the years, and I'd say that 85-90% of those students say it's the best thing they ever did in college. So it's really exciting. And from that was born this pilot program we've been tasked to take on, which is a study abroad in fall with University of Dundee, Scotland. So we'll be going to Dundee in the middle of the semester, in a fall semester, which is a little unique, but it's really exciting. And so we're starting to interview now for our first cohort.
So your enthusiasm, your joy, the level of engagement for students and for yourselves, I mean, it's just phenomenal. Phenomenal stuff.
Thanks.
Let's look at the other side. And what are some of the challenging things that you face here at the university, given your roles?
Yeah, you know, I think it hurts me the most when students don't know, haven't found their passion, don't know which direction to go, where they connect. I often joke, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. And when I say that to them, they kind of, it loosens them up a little bit. I think most students feel they need to have their entire career path worked out today. And I just think that's such an unfair burden we've placed upon our young people. Even at the age of 18, what do you want to study for the next 4 years? And then when they're 22, what do you want to do for the next 50 or 60? I think it's just, it's unfair. And so what do you want to do for the next 5 years?
Right.
And just get yourself into some place that you want to explore and that you're excited by. And then the rest is going to take care of itself. opportunities are going to come. Right. You're going to experience new things. You're going to meet new people, mentors, and they're all going to drag you in new directions you could have never have conceptualized, right? And so we just got to get those first 5 years started. And once I think students get that going, I think they're all right. So, you know, that's the biggest challenge. How do we get those students to find that first 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great advice, Jason.
Thanks.
Tell us about the Emergent Futures Lab. How did that come about and whereabouts are you?
Yeah, sure. So it's innovation design consultancy. We focus on early stage innovation. Curriculum here at the university with our innovation programs is, you know, it's kind of give and take back and forth between the two in some regard. But the birth of that project was really born out of our frustration with design thinking.
Okay.
Design thinking is often marketed as a creativity innovation process,
mm-hmm.
but really nothing creative or innovative comes out of that. Our program was built upon it to start, and I understand why. In 2012, 2013, it was the big thing that businesses, management were investing in for facilitating new. It aligned nicely with startup environments and ecosystems and cultures that were blossoming at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if we really understand what innovation is and how innovation works, we know that if it's new, genuinely new, unprecedented, right, then mm-hmm. it's not something that we can think. There's no way we can know it in advance. But design thinking is predicated on what we know and what other people know. It starts with ideation and empathizing, right, with others. And therefore, mm-hmm. it's completely already contained to what we know. Now, it's good for iterative creativity and innovation. You know, you could think iPhone 4, 4S, 5, 5S, 10, Pro, Max, right? Like, those are all iterative versions, even the iPad, right? And that's important sides of innovation. But we find that the early stage disruptive novel innovation is completely ignored. So we have a meta framework for that. So that's what we kind of do.
So you must have read my mind. Tell us about your love of disruption. I know I've seen your LinkedIn posts and how you approach posting there. Just give us an overview and your thoughts on the benefits and maybe some pitfalls with regard to disruption.
I think it intersects quite a bit with our Dundee students who are, you know, coming from the arts mm-hmm. primarily. We have a lot of art students in our entrepreneurship program. I think as students, we need to differentiate ourselves, right, so that companies see the value in what we're doing. So I think innately humans want to be different while following some sort of a pack, right?
Right.
And then, so how do we create that real genuine difference? How do we do something genuinely new? And so whether it be our LinkedIn posts, the way we go about drawing them, or maybe some of the more provocative things we say, it's to kind of stimulate this understanding that ideas and ideation, brainstorming, sticky notes are not really anything different at all, really. They're just slight variations. You know, how can we help others achieve their goal, whether they be individual creatives, entrepreneurs, or organizations, and culturally generate differentiation? And differentiation is critical as a student. You want to mm-hmm. stand out among your peers, right? And so that you can get opportunities. It never ends, whether you're part of a team, you're part of an organization. Could be sports, right? Like how do we disrupt a running play in the NFL, right? Like we've got to do mm-hmm. some different things than what have been done before. And so the easiest way to kind of manufacture that is don't do what's ever been done before.
Mm-hmm.
And so by taking a moment or many moments and understanding what exists, how things are being done, what's the history behind why they're being done. And once you've got all that listed, you could start to say, well, I'm not going to do these elements. I'm going to block them. And start to experiment and play and make and do and practice. It's not something you can think. You're going to have to engage in some way, right? Mm. And so if you stay true to what you've blocked and left behind of what exists, you're going to get to somewhere unique and novel.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, so much big picture thought there. I'm wondering, too, I think for a lot of us to realize what's out there and then not pursue that
mm-hmm.
in the absence of that, what we already know, there has to be a considerable amount of vulnerability that we encounter. How does that sort of play into things? Because a lot of us want to stay in a comfort zone. You know, jumping out and getting into disruption can be somewhat painful, I would think, maybe personally, professionally, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote a post about that this morning. I don't know.
Okay.
We kind of have this kind of theory that you, as a disruptor that's willing to put themselves out there to do something different, you should probably be comfortable standing behind some chicken wire for a while, right? So there's that great scene from the Blues Brothers. That's right. Exactly, right? And so guys walk into a bar, they're going to play Chicago Blues, and you know, the owners of the bar say, well, we've got two kinds of music here, country and Western, right? And so they get up there, they're very confident, they go up there on stage and they start playing some blues and the bottles, beer bottles start flying, right? And the glass is breaking and they're not even breaking a moment. They're playing and playing and playing, totally confident. They only stop because the bar shuts them down for a minute, right? And turns off the power of the guitars, makes them refocus and play a different song. But that notion of being comfortable behind chicken wire, being vulnerable, willing to take risks, willing to cause a riot even, right? I forget the composer, but a couple hundred years ago, there were some orchestral pieces, right, that were composed that were so different and disruptive, they were causing riots, right? But now they're considered the masters. And so, you know, these sorts of ideas as individuals and organizations to be confident and take chances, be bold, take risks, they pay off if you're willing to hang behind that chicken wire for a while till you can tear it down.
Great analogy.
Yeah, thanks.
So with that, the disruption that you've either fostered or been a part of directly, what are some hits and possible misses?
It's hard to say with the hits. The misses are easy because there's so much skepticism, right? You have to be quite skeptical. You have to suspend reality, suspend belief in what is and what currently the way things are being done. I think, you know, some examples out of the program we just did in Austria with the Transatlantic Entrepreneurship Academy, like, can we wear clothes that clean us? Can our clothes be you know, include bacteria, right? So that they clean us, you know? How can we disrupt the way we're currently approaching our standard everyday things? You know, how do we get away from fast fashion, right? And invent an entirely new wear type of clothing? You know, hits and misses take time. And I think that's part of also the struggle with being dedicated to a disruptive innovation. Everybody wants something really fast and really quick, which design thinking plays well into, right? But innovation's slow, long, it takes time and patience.
So much to think about. I know too, looking at your LinkedIn profile, I saw that you were involved with New Jersey's Google I/O Extended Conference.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's ironic that you bring that up because that led directly to my opportunity here.
Oh, fantastic.
So in 2012, I sold my partnership interest in the family business and my house in the same week. I signed a big non-compete. My wife and four-year-old daughter and I relocated back to New Jersey.
Wow.
Didn't know what I was going to do. I had to reinvent myself for a second time career-wise and spent a year writing and blogging, which led to being invited to this Google I/O conference here. I got involved in the startup ecosystem here in New Jersey, which was really blowing up at the time. Mm-hmm. We put on the conference here at Montclair State University. We were looking for a venue. We reached out to Dennis Bone, the founding director of our entrepreneurship center. He welcomed the opportunity to host us. Not only did I present at the conference that day, that's not important, but Dennis, in the evening, the final event was actually on a panel. And I don't remember what he said, but I disagreed and I raised my hand as a member of the audience. I didn't really know Dennis much at that time. I'd met him a few times. Mm-hmm. And I politely disagreed and shared why. And afterwards, at the after party, he came over to me and said, Jason, you know, I just want you to know you're absolutely right.
Nice.
And yeah, it was really cool. And we chatted for 5 minutes and we went our different ways. And about 2 weeks later, he called me back and offered me the opportunity to be the first full-time faculty at the university. So
huge.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Such a great example of networking.
Yeah, completely.
I got to throw this in because it's the soup du jour, ChatGPT. Thoughts on, you know, good and bad uses, those sort of things.
I think many believe it's creative and innovative. And I think that forces us to ask the question again, like, what is creativity and innovation? Mm-hmm. If you are entering a query or a prompt into ChatGPT and it serves you up a bunch of new things you'd never considered before, you'd deem it creative, right? It's new. Mm-hmm. But new to who?
It already exists.
Absolutely. And anything ChatGPT already exists. It can't feed you anything else because it's based on consuming the internet through September 21, right? And so actually can't generate anything novel. Now, it can string together a number of words that may never have been put together before if you prompted enough times, right? In theory, it could put something unprecedented together. But generally speaking, it's based on what we know. It forces us to, consider what's new. New to who? New to me? New to you? New to them? Mm. Is it new? You discovered it today, but everybody else in the control room saying, well, we've known about that for 3 years, Adam. Like, you know, what are you talking about? There's nothing, right? So it's an important tool. I would also say that I rewrote my entire advanced startup course over winter break in response to it.
Wow.
Yeah, because I think I relied on a lot of papers. And I was able to run my course through ChatGPT and complete it in about 5 minutes. And it's a 6-credit course.
It's phenomenal.
So I guess if it was 3 credits, I could have done it in 2.
I would love to stay longer. I just have one final question for you.
Sure.
Given what you know now,
yeah,
what advice would you give to yourself, say freshman, sophomore year of college?
I think it'd be 2 things. One, I think every freshman, sophomore should get a sales job.
Mm.
It's hard, it's uncomfortable, but it's a priceless education that actually you get paid for and will serve you well in anything you do for the rest of your life. Networking, as an entrepreneur, selling yourself in an interview, trying to get admitted to a master's degree, whatever it is, we're all selling something at all times. And so getting those skills. The second is, don't stay at that job for more than 6 months and change jobs every 6 months at that age. Whatever you're interested in, go get a job doing it in that field and learn about it. It's a free education. In fact, you are getting paid to learn about that industry and field. Then you can find out if it's something you're interested in or not really quick, inexpensive lessons.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great advice. Great conversation.
Thanks.
Jason, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. It was great talking to you, Adam.